You're listening to Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. You may have heard of exoplanets, but what about exocomets? Well, scientists say that's exactly what they've found, comets outside our solar system. But those scientists weren't actually the first ones to spot them. That honor goes to an amateur astronomer, or a citizen scientist, as they're sometimes known. Andrew Vandenberg is one of the professional scientists on the newly released study. He is a NASA Sagan postdoctoral fellow at the University of Texas, Austin. Andrew, welcome to Living Lab.
Hi, thanks for having me.
What is so exciting about a comet outside our solar system? I have to say, when I first read that, I kind of went, well, wouldn't we expect that? I mean, what's so surprising about that?
Well, we do expect it. The problem is that these objects, these comets, are so small, it's really hard to detect them. In the last 20 years, we've gone from not being able to detect any planets outside of our solar system to being able to detect very large planets like Jupiter, and eventually to be able to detect smaller planets almost like Earth with the Kepler Space Telescope, which was launched in 2009. But comets are an even trickier task. Comets are much smaller, of course, than even the Earth. And the smaller the object is, the harder it is to detect. So really, this is one of the very first few hints of the population of comets, which we expect to be out there, but had never really seen that well before.
So when you or someone else, or for that matter, a computer, is sifting through data from the Kepler Space Telescope looking for exoplanets or exocomets or any of these other bodies out in space, what is it you're actually looking for? What's the signal you're looking for?
So we look for planets in several different ways. The way that has been made most successful by the Kepler telescope is what's called the transit method. And what we do with Kepler is we stare at many, many stars all at once, about 100,000 stars at a time. And Kepler took an image of those stars every 30 minutes for about 4 years. When a planet is lined up just so that it crosses between Kepler and the star, part of the shadow of that planet falls on Kepler, and Kepler detects that as the brightness of the star being very slightly diminished. This is called a transit, and what we do is we search Kepler data for these slight dimming events. Now, professional astronomers have figured out ways to do this with computers. And it's efficient, it's fast, and it is possible to look for these dips when there are multiple dips that all line up. Every some number of days, there might be a dip. And computers are really good at detecting these periodicities, as we call them. But it's more difficult when there aren't periodicities. And that's where amateur astronomers like Tom Jacobs come in.
So what was different about the signal that Tom Jacobs picked up this time that turned out to be a comet?
So there were a couple interesting things about it. One of them is these signals were not periodic. For example, if a planet goes around the star, you expect for every some number of days, in the case of the Earth, every 365 days, for there to be a dip in the star's brightness. But the dips that Tom saw didn't happen regularly. They happen sporadically. The other really interesting difference between what Tom saw and what we usually see when planets transit stars is that the shape of these transits were different. Usually these dips, these transits, have a very characteristic shape, and it's symmetric. And you can understand that because planets are spherical, stars are spherical. There's really no difference, as we can tell, between the left-hand side of a planet and the right-hand side of a planet. So there should be no difference between when the planet starts across the star and when it finishes across the star. That gives you a symmetric dip. But what we saw with these transits that Tom found is that they were not symmetric. They were, in fact, highly skewed, looked like shark teeth almost.
I'm talking with Andrew Vandenberg of the University of Texas, Austin, about the recent discovery of an exocomet. I have to say, this involvement of amateur physicists, amateur astronomers, citizen scientists, whatever name you want to give it, this group Planet Hunters, is possibly my favorite part of this whole story. As we've already mentioned, Tom Jacobs of Bellevue, Washington, was the person who first spotted this, and you've actually worked with him before. So what was your first reaction when he told you that he'd found these weird-looking, unusual-looking blips in the signals from Kepler?
Well, Tom is a man of extreme patience. He went through the entire Kepler data set by eye. That's about 200,000 light curves, each of which have about 60,000 data points.
That's just incredible.
And he did it over the course of about 4 months. And when you're looking for these weird things, these aperiodic dips, you end up getting a lot of artifacts, junk, if you will. The spacecraft is really, really stable, and it's in a environment where the temperature is not changing, where the illumination from the sun is not changing by very much, and it shouldn't be moving around. But on occasion, there are glitches that happen. And when you're looking for these single events, most of what you're going to find are glitches. So for about 4 months or so, Tom would send me and another astronomer, Saul Rappaport, emails saying, hey, take a look at this. And for the majority of them, we would take a look at them, we'd conclude, this is probably a glitch because there is some telltale sign here that shows that the Kepler was not working perfectly right there. So we move on. But when we saw these, we couldn't immediately rule out anything like that. And then the fact that there were multiple dips like this around the same star happening over the course of the 4 years made us start to think that these really were astrophysical events.
The fact that an amateur astronomer found these signatures that a computer would not have found and had the patience to do this, I have to say, gives me some hope. I mean, we hear so much about how the robots are going to take everybody's job and there's going to be nothing left for humans to do. Clearly, there are things that in this case, the human eye and the human mind are doing better than a computer. And for that matter, something that as you've already said, the professionals probably wouldn't have taken the time to do. These amateurs are making discoveries that professional scientists might never have gotten around to doing themselves.
Yeah, the amateur astronomer community is really amazing. And I've been very fortunate to work with a large number of them, including Tom Jacobs. They have patience, they have skills, they have resources that a lot of professional astronomers don't have access to, and they can make big contributions and they can impact how we view our universe.
I'm talking with Andrew Vanderberg of the University of Texas, Austin, about the recent discovery of an exocomet. So, Andrew, on the heels of this exocomet discovery, a different group of scientists at University of Hawaii announced that they'd seen either a comet or an asteroid that started outside our solar system, but then actually dipped in, swung around the sun, and then headed back out of the solar system again. Besides seeming like some sort of cosmic near miss, what's the importance of this kind of comet coming into the solar system and back out again?
Well, when we detect planets and comets outside of our solar system, usually we do them in indirect methods, like as I was telling you about the transit method, where we look for dips in brightness. There's only so much we can learn from that. And one of the big challenges that we face in our field is trying to learn about these objects that are so far away and so hard to study that we can barely even know that they're there at all. When a comet comes to us, we can start to study it in much more detail.
And this one that was recently observed, do we think we'll see more? Is this one of those instances where maybe we now have the technology to see something that's been happening all along?
Yeah, I think that's right. So the real change that has made discoveries like this possible are the advent of large surveys of the sky that look for things that change. In the past, we didn't have the ability to do that for several reasons. First, you need digital cameras, because without a computer to do this search for you, it's really, really hard to look at that much sky. Tom can do it, but it took him 4 months to go through a data set that was frankly much smaller than the entire sky. So even if we had all of the amateur astronomers in the world working on this, we would not be able to complete this kind of search. So computers are really useful for this kind of thing.
Andrew Vanderberg is a NASA Sagan postdoctoral fellow at the University of Texas, Austin. Andrew, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Up next, what time changes do to your body clock and why that matters. Living Lab Radio continues after a short break.